Turn with me to Psalms chapter 32 for an opening passage here for the message today. Psalm 32. Just a few words, a few verses that I would like to read here. Verses 7 to 9 says, "Thou art my hiding place. Thou shalt preserve me from trouble. Thou shalt compass me about with songs of deliverance. Selah. I will instruct thee and teach thee in the way which thou shalt go. I will guide thee with mine eye. Be ye not as the horse or as the mule, which have no understanding, whose mouth must be held in with bit and bridle, lest they come near unto thee." And I'm going to stop reading there. I've entitled the message this morning, "A Teachable Spirit." A Teachable Spirit. Do you have, do I have a teachable spirit? Or whatever what are we talking about? When we say that, think about a teachable spirit. If we look at this passage here, David, through the instruction from God, is saying, is given this idea in verse 8 that I will instruct thee, I will teach thee in the way that thou shalt go, I will guide thee with mine eye. And he uses the illustration of don't be like a horse and a mule, which must be controlled by the force of that pain, that discomfort of having that bit in their mouth, to make them do what you as the owner or the rider does. Now, I know some horses go beyond this, that you can almost, it seems like they catch what you're thinking, and you can direct them much easier than that. But nevertheless, as a general example he gives here, to us as individuals, followers of God, that we would be easily instructed, that we would be able to be taught, and you have kind of the ongoing idea of, I will instruct thee and teach thee in the way that thou shalt go. And so, as we live day to day, we are to take our direction from God in a very readily and easily and without a lot of fuss, be able to kind of understand. And he uses the idea of guiding them with their eye. With his eye, just kind of given that look, given that direction, and you've maybe done that, or you've experienced that, or maybe you as a husband and wife has been able to kind of read each other's mind. You know, you see that, and you know what the other one is thinking, and can take your cues from what to do next from that. And I'm not quite sure how that plays out in your particular experience here, but nevertheless, it gives the idea of such a close relationship. And such a desire to walk close to God that he can easily give us direction and teach us the way that we should go. In life, we want to be lifelong learners, right? How many of us here are a lifelong learner or have that aspiration? When you think about that, what does that mean to you? What does it mean to be a lifelong learner? There's a particular thing I'm after. I wonder if it's going to come through here. What is a lifelong learner? Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Someone else? I think that sometimes when people say they are lifelong learners, maybe you can get the idea. My father-in-law used to talk about an acquaintance of his who was a professional student, and it seemed like he went to school, and then he went to college, and then he took another course, and then he asked and did what it took to get a different degree, and he just, you know, as he matured and through his life, he was a professional student, and so he was always learning new things. And I think sometimes, at least maybe it's just me, I think of this, a lifelong learner is someone that is trying to learn something new, something out there, something that I haven't handled or gotten my head around yet. I'm learning something new, and so I read lots of books, and I understand, or I come to an understanding of many trains of thought, or maybe many ideas, reaching for something that is a lifelong experience of, I want to discover the new and the something that I didn't know before from that perspective. I think it kind of hides, and Bradley kind of alluded to it in what he said there, I don't know, it kind of hides the idea of we need to continue to learn about the things that we think we do know, the things that we do have a grasp on. And I think that's part of the idea is, do I have a teachable spirit when it comes to spiritual things, the things of God, the things that where I am trying to respond to the creator of this world? And many of us have been raised in a Christian home, and so all our life, just our whole human experience has been saturated by God, the things of God, the Bible. Now, not all of us are that way here, but that is most of us, that is. And so we can get to the place, and we kind of discuss that somewhat in Sunday school, where we got it. This is it. We have all the answers. And we lose this teachable spirit. I have just a number of things when it comes to just kind of things to discuss here that came to me as I was pondering this morning, yesterday some, what does it mean to have a teachable spirit? Things about learning. One of them is this lifelong learner idea. And there's a bit of a negative thing in that, especially in academia maybe, where it becomes an end in itself, new and reaching for something different, and don't take care of the things, you know, making sure that the things that they do think they know, they have right. And we can be that too. Teachable moments. What is a teachable moment? You think about that. When I think about having a teachable spirit, do I take advantage of a teachable moment? Maybe I'll open it up again. What is a teachable moment to you? Does someone have a thought on that quickly? Maybe I'll pick on somebody. Timo, what do you think? What's a teachable moment?
Reality doesn't match expectation.
We were just going along someday and something happened in our experience where suddenly there was a lesson to be learned, and that happens, that can happen lots and lots of ways. It can happen in our house when the little guys were all there in the living room and the noise is going and somebody has a ball and they're kicking the ball around and all of a sudden, bang, onto mom's plant and the branch, breaks a branch off. Well, it's a teachable moment, right? Here the result of the activity is what caused the heartache and just now what? What can we learn from that? To have a teachable spirit, I think, it only works, or it plays off of, or it can make be real when we take those moments in life to actually learn something. What happened? And did I learn from this moment, the events of this moment, the lessons that I learned, that I should have learned? Is my spirit open to this? And I can just give an illustration from this morning. You know, we're sitting there, and my wife and I are sitting in the living room, Bible, drinking coffee, and I couldn't quite, well, are we having a potluck today? And yeah, we're having a potluck today. And what are you making? Well, who's in charge? What are we having for food? Just kind of curious. And she said a little bit about what her part was, and I was, I kind of expressed that. Well, and what happened with that little thing that there in our home that day? Well, she felt bad for one thing. She had her reasons as to why she was trying to do what she did with her part of the lunch, and you know. What can I learn from the fact that my conduct in this situation caused a problem? Am I able to take those real situations in life and learn, now what can I learn from that? Well, there's lots of things that I can learn, which is not really the point, but one is, why would I be critical? Like, I mean, do I want to make the dessert myself? I mean, thank goodness it's just one of the, I don't have to worry about, praise the Lord that she's going to do something here that's going to work and it's going to be good and everybody's going to feel good about it. And why did I inject myself into this particular situation? I just shouldn't have. I should have stayed out of it. And the thing that I did in my life caused a teachable moment for me that said, well, next time, probably better to shut up, just be quiet. Looking for a verse that I have down here that kind of speaks to this. Proverbs 16:22-25, we'll read 3 or 4 verses here. Understanding is a wellspring of life unto him that hath it, but the instruction of fools is folly. The heart of the wise teaches his mouth and addeth learning to his lips. Pleasant words are as honeycomb, sweet to the soul and health to the bones. There is a way that seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof is the ways of death. And so the heart of the wise teaches his mouth, addeth learning to his lips. And so if we want to have a teachable spirit, we recognize that as I go through life as a lifelong learner, I can see places that my conduct caused problems. And what can I do about that? I can learn, have that teachable spirit that I should just do something different. I shouldn't have injected myself into that. Teachable moments. Another idea that I thought of as I'm thinking about having a teachable spirit is to learn the lessons the hard way. You ever hear about learning, or have you ever learned lessons the hard way? There's a man I knew who someone had said about him, he fell out of the stupid tree and hit every branch on the way down. It just seemed like everything he did was the wrong choice in a tight situation. And you couldn't tell him anything, and you couldn't give him instruction. It seemed like he had to do it and learn the hard way himself. You know, it's kind of easy to be that ourselves, to be that. But learn things the easy way, to take instruction. You know, the Bible is, especially Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, are full of direction to children, to sons especially, to take the direction of their parents. And I think this is primarily why. You know, there are things that those with experience that went before you know by virtue of having been there that they can give direction to. A teachable spirit means that we don't have to learn everything the hard way. We can take instruction just on face value. And another thing that kind of goes along with that, and I'll read some more verses here. When we think about a teachable spirit or being teachable, we maybe our mind goes to the different instructions in Scripture where it talks about children. Matthew 18:3 is an example. And said, verily I say unto you, except you be converted and become as little children, you shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. So just that kind of an idea is to be a little children, just to receive instruction. And, you know, as we get older, we experience more of life. Our experience gives us confidence. It gives us kind of understanding about the things of life. But it can militate against this ability to be taught because we have a history that we think we know where it has gone. But on the other hand, if you're a child, it's much easier. I just don't know. I didn't experience it. Nathaniel and I had a little bit of this kind, just as an example, yesterday. We were out there and he had his little bow out there. We were shooting the target. And we're trying to make this thing hit the bullseye, trying to get the thing dialed in where we could actually not just wing arrows out there, but actually hit what we were shooting at. And so adjust the sights. Well, how do you adjust the sights? Well, I told him, you know, when you're adjusting, take this little Allen screw and you're going to change the sights on this bow. There's an easy answer. When you're trying to decide if you're shooting to the right or if you're shooting down or your arrow is hitting the wrong spot, how do you know which way to adjust? Well, I told him, what you got to do with your sight is you have to chase the arrow. So you have to do it. If it's hitting to the right, you move your sight to the right. And he just instantly picked up on that. That's kind of counterintuitive. It's not, if it's hitting to the right, you should move your sight to the left because that's how, just intuitive nature of that. But I was able to tell them, well, not really. If you have your bow lined up and you move your sight to the right, that pushes your bow to the left. So your arrow will go where it ought to be. The point being, you know, he had no background to how to adjust a sight. And no, he just didn't know. And so he was just readily willing to say, okay, if you want to adjust your sight, chase the arrow. That's all you got to do. And just willing to walk with the truth. You know, I think that maybe that's a poor illustration, an illustration in our spiritual lives. You know, sometimes we get to the place, well, we know, we have experience, we've seen it all, we have an understanding, we know, and we kind of move beyond the. It becomes much harder to adjust someone. Now, here we find a bit of a paradox, because there are different scriptures that teach us to be mature, things like 1 Corinthians 15:58, where it tells us as Christians, as maturing Christians, therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. And another verse from Ephesians 4:14, where it says, that we henceforth be no more children, tossed to and fro, and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sleight of men and cunning craftiness, whereby they lie in wait to deceive. And so we have this picture that as a man matures in Christ, he becomes more and more confident in his foundation. Less easy to be moved around. More of a pillar in the church, if you will, where people can look to him for advice and for direction and for can lean into his experience in church life. As an old, I think that's why the Bible teaches respect our elders and not rail against them or not rebuke them, but rather entreat them, because you know he might just know something that you don't by virtue of his experience. And so what I'm getting at in that is it can tend to, those good things can kind of militate against the idea of me having much left to learn as I mature. But we need to maintain a teachable spirit, which again I think was emphasized in various ways this morning already. Well, maybe along that line, you've heard the saying, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, you know. It gets pretty hard to change much there. Not too many more things that you're going to do to fix that. And maybe a prime example of that is the advances in technology. We hear that, you know, you see somebody as they age kind of getting behind, getting used to what they're used to, what they know how to use, and pretty soon they're kind of behind, and the hill becomes really steep. And I find myself already, somebody suggested, well, our accountant recently suggested with one of the software things that we had been using for a while that they had told us to do. And so now I finally learned how to do this thing the other day. Hey, let's do this new one. Well, I had a very little interest, zero interest in learning some new suite of technology and where the data was going to be entered and how those things are going to work together and set up new password to get into this login. I don't feel like learning anything. And I suppose it's possible to get that in spiritual life. And I just heard all the discussions. A man may say, I've stood against this. You know, years ago we talked about the ecumenical movement or you name the doctrine that swept through the church. And I just don't have time to, you know, there's nothing much left for me to learn. Well, a teachable person is someone who, in his Christian walk, recognizes that I still have things to learn, and I still get things wrong. Another thing that I think about this being teachable is the effect that habits have on us. And this can be both good and bad, of course. Two examples that I can think of. When I was growing up, I had an older brother that lived with us there. Trevor, many of you know him. And him and I shared a bedroom for a long time. And a lot of our lives was together. And there came a time in my early teens or somewhere in there that I started in kind of making fun of him, or just saying derogatory things about him. Or, maybe it started out in good fun. Maybe I was just, he's my brother. Maybe sometimes I was grouchy at him, so I'd say something negative. And, there became this pattern in my life where every time I spoke to him or of him, it was just pretty negative. That's the first thing that came to my mind. And there came a time later on that I had to go back to him and apologize and say, you know what? I have been doing that kind of thoughtlessly, kind of, and it was not very nice. It was mean. And I need to change that. But that had become a habit in my life, a habit of saying and doing negative things. And I think in church life, it can be that way, and we can kind of develop all kinds of negative things that can happen in church life. Another one that just kind of an example of habitual things or the way that habits, and I think some people are more inclined to this than others. Maybe I'm just a habitual person. I don't know. But the other day, I was here in Central Point and I was going home, but I came to there by the elevator where the Grange Co-op has their big elevator, and I needed to go down to, I think I was going to go wash my pickup, so I needed to go down to the next exit down. So I came up there, I was going to take a right, and I looked down the street, and there's a whole bunch of policemen, and they were blocking traffic, and it was going to be a mess, and there was a real snarl of traffic there coming across the thing from the east, and the whole intersection was just jammed with people. Couldn't go straight, couldn't go the way that I wanted to. Oh, just go the other way. So I went clear down around by the Blaylock Road exit, and I got on the freeway, but I still was going down two exits down, and so jumped on the freeway, going around this traffic jam, headed for the second exit down, and I get to the first exit, and my pickup just gets off. That's the exit I use. There's just, what can I do that, without just, it was so habitual that, I realized that I didn't want to get off here. And had to look in my mirror and cross some white lines and get back in the freeway to make it down the exit that I wanted to go to. Thoughtlessly conducting myself just because of habit. And so I think those are places in church life, or we can, there's places that we can learn. We can be teachable. We can be the one to, maybe if we're the if we never speak up in Sunday school, maybe we can learn to do a little of that. We just get in that habit. Just let somebody else answer first. Or maybe it's the other way around. Some of us that talk too much could just be quiet and let somebody else speak, I suppose. You get the point. Just the way it's been, can we learn? Can we get out of the grooves that we're walking in and do something different, learn, have a teachable spirit, how my conduct is affecting those around me. And making a difference. when we get old, our significant amounts of learning are behind us. That's just the way experience works. Significant amounts of life are behind us. That's why we ask people with experience or with age for advice, because they've been there. They've been able to succeed through the bumps and bangs of life, and they have something to direct or some direction to give to us. To be teachable from a place of maturity, and maybe we talk to the older ones, to teach from a place of maturity means the ability to change our mind. To change your mind, even in your mature, can you change your mind about something that you thought for a long time that you believed in? And I have an illustration here that maybe can, just from my life's experience, that can kind of show a little bit how difficult it can be to change your mind sometimes. Years ago now, a friend of mine, actually my cousin, his wife had died from cancer. And shortly after he died, I wanted to spend some time with him, to be kind to him, to walk with him through this difficult time. And another friend of ours, a mutual friend of ours, well, you know what we're gonna do? We're gonna go elk hunting. Go elk hunting in Montana. So him and I bought tags and drove over there to Montana, western Montana, met our friend there, and he knew the area more, and we were going up hunting. It was a late season rifle tag that we had. There's different things that come with it. High country, cold weather. In Montana there, the late season, the short days, and winter conditions. And so we went out there, which is something I completely love to do. All of the above was terribly much fun to me. But it was a cold day. It was a short, snowy day, rainy day. Just right on the edge of freezing rain as we were out there. So we left early in the morning. And I had recently bought a GPS handheld one. It was before they were on our phones, and I had this thing, and I didn't really know how to run it very much. But when I jumped out of the pickup, we were going to go all day, took some food with us, hunting in this area. None of us knew the area very well. Strange country, snowy, you know, we couldn't see very far the landmarks around us. So I just punched in the save my location right here at this pickup. But I'd hunted a long time, very comfortable in the woods. You know, I wasn't scared to be out there. And I had a compass in my pack, I think. I don't remember that for sure. But went out into this day hunting, long day, found tracks. You know, we were following these elk tracks and going through the woods and through the canyons and hunting and, you know, the lay of the land. You know, it kind of felt like we were kind of hunting downhill and into this one big drainage we were hunting. And we got down there, and pretty soon we were pretty far in there, and it's time for lunch. So we stopped and built the fire. And I remember while we were there at the fire trying to open my gun, the bolt action on my rifle, but it was frozen shut. First and only time I ever experienced that when I was out in the woods, where ice had built up on this thing. And my bolt was frozen shut, couldn't get it open, so I had to hold it up at the fire that we made to get this thing thawed out so that I could cycle it if we ever did find an elk out here. But at that time, short days, it's time to head back, so we're going to head back to where the pickup is. And we started back after eating, and we went farther and farther, and for all of us, you know, suddenly the lay of the land, we were headed back what we thought for was the pickup, and we were just going kind of on an uphill, and we thought, well, this is the direction of the pickup. Kind of agreed. So we felt confident. The farther we went, the more uncomfortable something just wasn't what we thought. The lay of the land started looking, we thought we were going to come to some clearings, and they just weren't there. And the farther we went, the more we realized that the direction we were going, that we were sure of, was something just wasn't right here. And we went for a couple hours, and now it was maybe an hour till dark, and we had been walking 4 hours. And what are we gonna do? It became pretty apparent that we were lost. We did not know where we were. Where we were was not where we thought we were. And so what are we gonna do? Well, then my mind, well, okay, we drove up here. You know, this canyon that we're hunting in is we could just hike down the canyon, and eventually we'd hit a road, and somebody could take us back up for the trucks. So we stood there and discussed it. I don't know if we talked about it too much, but in my mind, it's a very legitimate option. Let's just hike down this canyon until we hit that road. It's only a couple miles, and then somebody will take us back up, or we can find a way, because we had been walking long enough that we didn't know where we were. And I thought of that GPS that I didn't have a lot of confidence in, and pulled that thing out of my pack and lit it up and waited for it to find its satellites, and looked at what it told me to do. And what it told me to do was exactly the opposite of what I thought. Instead of the direction we had been going, it said, turn around, those tracks you're on, and follow those back. Because the direction of the pickup is back. It's not even that terribly far back. It's a lot closer than you thought it was, but it's the other direction. That's what the little black machine told me. I remember standing there in the sun thinking about the implication. It was a cold day. We were not prepared to spend the night in the woods. It was raining, freezing rain. A lot at stake, you know. And thinking to myself, well, I am sure of the direction that I'm going. I have a backup plan. We can go down this creek. That downhill will take me to a road sooner or later. I'll get out this way. And so I was there with my moment. Teach them, what am I going to do? You know, I don't think it's beyond a reason to say our lives were at risk on a long, cold, rainy night. I suppose we could have built a fire, but nobody was going to come looking for us. We stayed at a hotel that night. And what was I going to do with this? And I just remember the real struggle it was to change my mind. To look at that little black box and say, yeah, this thing can see satellites that I can't see. And there's just parts of life that my experience and my confidence just not going the right direction here. And so we looked at that thing and I said, it tells us to go back. The pickup's not even that terribly far from here. And I think by that time it was probably only about a half hour till dark. We were in the woods, in the dark, in strange country. So we strapped our packs back on and took a drink, and we made a run for where this thing was going to take us. And, you know, sure enough, wasn't even that terrible long. We came out of the woods, and there it was. It was a pickup. But that we had followed this thing in just the opposite of what we thought was doing the right thing. Well, I got my maps out later. And looked at that, figured out where we had gone, and figured out where we were headed down that stream. And here where we had started in hunting, turned out to be a very unique thing where the creek we started in on made almost a 180 degree, just a long bending curve. And we had been hunting on that slope all day, and we were still on it. And it was something like, I forget, 23 or 25 miles till that creek crossed the road. If we would have went down that creek, you know, it would have been probably a couple days till we got out of there, if we got out. We were just completely wrong. That big old curve had taken us somewhere that we did not want to go. But the point I'm making here, the difficulty it is for someone who has had confidence in their way, the path that they're on, to change your mind. It was so difficult for me to look at that thing and to trust it, to trust what it's saying. I think that, you know, the analogy can break down, but obviously the Bible is here. And when we find something in the Bible, when we find direction there that really shapes what we have been doing or what we have done, I think it can be those kind of a moments. We can try to explain it away, try to... And I've seen people do that. I've been in conversations where people were put in a corner, if you will, like the Pharisees were by Jesus this morning in Sunday school, put in a corner by what the Apostle Paul did or Peter, what they said. And they said, well, but those are the apostles. You know, we can't do that. Or someone else said, well, that's not the red letters of the Bible. That's the ones we need, is the red letters of the Bible. The rest of this is kind of, and criticize the apostles and their actions, or criticize the directives of the Apostle Paul. You know, he was a woman hater. That's why he said the women are to be silent in church. Those kind of ideas. People run up against their way forward, what they think, and they run up against this. And the Bible's not a black box, but you get the analogy this morning. This direction, this foundation, this thing that can point us the right direction. And so if we want success in our life, find that. The authority that comes from the Bible. Well, another thing that we can think about when it comes to having a teachable spirit is to be ready to hear from those that we think are maybe much less experienced or don't know as much as we do. A prime example of this is the story of Naaman there in the Old Testament, where he went down to Elisha the prophet, and he got this servant to come out and say, go wash in the Jordan. And Naaman was just upset with the whole thing. I'm just going home because they didn't respect me enough to have a man of God come out and tell me. But he got home. I guess he made it home. Suddenly I can't remember, but this little servant girl. No, I don't think it was a servant girl. His servant on the way home said, if you'd have been asked to do some great thing, you'd have done it. why don't you take this little bit of direction, because your salvation is at stake. And Naaman had the humility to say, you know what? You're right. The way I've been acting is wrong. And maybe you've had that kind of an experience too. You know, I sat in my office one time years ago. A friend of mine, Tom, was there helping us with the book work. And I was on the phone, and I was talking to somebody that had done us wrong. I can't remember exactly. Situation, what it was, but clearly, it's coming back to me now. It has to do with some mail had been directed to the wrong place, and we had been overcharged because of it. And so it was their mistake, sent the mail to somewhere else, and now I was being blamed and having to pay more for the situation. I didn't like the situation. And I got off the phone, and Tom, there behind me, said something like, I don't know if Jesus would have talked to them like that. Was I ever ashamed? You know, I had to call the guy back and apologize for how I had said. You know, I did not want to hear it from Tom. You know, I had lots of things in Tom's life that I could criticize. There's many things about Tom that I thought he had a lot of room to grow in his Christian understanding. But there came that message to me, and there was the moment. Can I accept that criticism from someone that, you know, absolutely didn't come from a place, a right to tell me anything. A teachable spirit is willing to take those things and say, yeah, you're right, no matter the situation. The truth is that I shouldn't have talked to that guy that way. I owe him an apology. Proverbs 3:11-12 tells us, my son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, neither be weary of his correction. For whom the Lord loveth, he correcteth, even as a father the son in whom he delighteth. And I think we do good to remember that here, this is in the context of a man that is walking with God. This is his son. This is somebody that has some knowledge of the ways of Christ, is working in the will and ways of God. And yet in that, God still has things to teach us. Teach us as sons. He wants to teach us something. Now that brings with it a humility in our self-confidence. Humility and correction. David was an example of that with Nathan there. Nathan came to the prophet, told him the story about stealing the little lamb, and David was all upset, but Nathan said, it was you. Did this. And David's response of, you know what? You're right. That was me. I did that. I'm going to have to try to find a way to make it right. So I find in this teachable spirit for mature Christians, not so much of an openness to learning new things as it is in a calibration of what we think we know. Less reliance on our good intentions and benevolent feelings, and more in tune with correct actions and good results. I think another thing that I think about with this teachable spirit is learning comes in quietness. You know, busyness and racing through life comes with it. It lends itself to habitually continuing on the path that I'm already on, because I don't have time to have a new structure, a new idea. I don't have time to think this through. We have to do this because we have to get on to the next thing, and we have to just quickly schedule our way through life. Learning comes in quietness. Another thing that I think about when it comes to a teachable spirit is to rejoice while standing in front of closed doors. Ever think about that? That's become much more real to me in the last number of years. Doing some idea I've tried, some things I've pushed into, I want to see if this can work. Let's call them and maybe they'll come and we can get this thing moving forward. And there we stand in front of a closed door. What do we feel right there? Are we teachable? And for me, it has been a growing thing in my life. Something I think that I am learning is to be able to stand in front of a closed door and just remember, thank God, this door is closed. I don't know why. I wish it was different. My idea didn't work, obviously. I wanted to try it, but it didn't work. God, the door is closed. Just to rejoice while standing in front of a closed door. Another thing that I think about with a teachable spirit, thinking about doors and the decisions we make in life, is a teachable spirit is one who pushes the doors of life gently. Think about that. Not have to crash through. Not to, my will don't have to be the one, but rather gently approach ideas and changes and actions and corrections and all of the things that we do in life, do we push on the doors gently? I had to think just the illustration of a little baby, a sleeping baby. You know, those of you who have tried and have taken the time to put a baby to sleep so that you can sleep or do your day's work, whatever, you know, and sometimes that can be a real challenge. And those of us that have done that kind of have a deep respect for a sleeping baby. That baby's sleeping. Hey, let's let him sleep. Let's, this conduct here in life, let's let the baby sleep. Whereas if you're a little guy and you haven't had to spend the time putting them to sleep, you might show up and bang the doors and, hey, what's up? And he just crash the ball, do whatever. The sleeping baby is not a big deal to you. I think that's a little bit the way life, a teachable spirit teaches us to not crashity-bang through life and decisions and other people's opinions and the correction that comes to us, but rather be kind of respectful. Approach life like it's a sleeping baby. Push on the doors gently. Quietness is where we learn things. I thought of Samson there. It's quietness. It's stilling himself. When his eyes were out, that's when he learned things. Think about that. It's a terribly sad story. But that's when he learned that strength came from God. That's when he learned that God, he needed God. That's when he learned that he was nothing without God. It was in that quietness, in a really bad place. Before that, full of self-confidence. He was going to do what he was going to do with that lady and those gates of the city and all the rest of the things that he was willing to, temptation that he came to, etc. In the quiet, learning comes in the quietness in those hard times. Learn from those who have experience. Talked about that a little bit already. One thing, and here, this is a good one for me, when it comes to changing your mind, can we admit that we were wrong? Can we articulate that we were wrong? Admit to it and say, you know what, I was viewing that wrong, I had it wrong. Another thing that you think about having a teachable spirit is that it means change. To be taught means to learn something. To learn something means maybe you do it different, you understand it different, you change how you've gotten it. If there's never any change in your life's experience and how you conduct yourself, then I probably haven't learned too much. So hopefully, like the illustration I gave this morning of criticizing my wife there, maybe I can learn from that. Just next time, don't say anything. Another thing that you can think about is that times of conflict, times of failure, and times of success, these are spots in life that we can learn something and look for those. And so you get into a conflict and there's an argument and the tempers flare and you have to, you know, talk yourself down off the ledge, if you will. And that's a spot. What happened? What happened there? How did we get to this uncomfortable, teachable moment? What can I do different in my conduct? Look for those teachable moments. Same way with healing and edification and victory. Those teachable moments, you know, look for those. What can I learn from that? You watch somebody walk into a tense situation, or watch them work through their child training, or watch them interact when somebody is upset, or take that call by somebody that's trying to set them straight. How did they handle it? How did they work through that? What can I learn about when I conduct myself? Just to give an illustration of this, one of the little things that I learned in the last number of years was taught to me by a secular man in business life, and trying to, his goal was to help teams work together to be more successful. And often, you know, people are at odds to each other and banging heads on the workforce. How do you work this out so that they can work together as a team? You see two talented people and you need both of their input and yet they're at odds. How do you work through that? One of the things that he taught me to do, which I have used to has been, I feel like has been successful in talking to people in tense situations, is just to repeat back to them what they said. So they come at this explanation as to why they are in this situation that they're in. And there's a bit of conflict and a bit of pressure there. And And to defuse the situation is to simply tell the person back what they said. So I'm hearing you say that because of such and such, this is what you feel is out of line, or this is the failure, this is what caused the situation. Is that what you're saying? And if you didn't get it quite right, you can do that a couple more times. One thing it does, it makes people feel heard, understood. At least, even if you don't agree, you know what I'm saying. And something that most of my adult life, I didn't employ this idea. But it has been very successful, and I think it can be used very successfully to help in times of conflict. Just those little things. So when someone else is successful in relationship or in life, do we learn from them? It is tremendously helpful in relationships to come from a position of being teachable. It is tremendously helpful in giving direction to come from a place of learning together. And I don't have time for this illustration other than to briefly say that in the last number of years, I don't know, it was 20 or 30 years, something like that, there has been a structural change in the commanders of the United States submarine force, how they give direction to their crew underwater. And it all goes back to one man and a failure that he had. He got down there and he was given command of this brand new nuclear submarine, and he gets down there, and it wasn't a boat that he studied, but somebody else, I don't know, through sickness or something, wasn't able to take the job, and it was his turn. So they gave him this new boat full of a crew, and the crew was had the highest turnover rate of any crew in any of the submarines on the whole fleet. He gets down there, okay, he's going to give some direction to this crew. And he goes down there, and I don't remember the exact illustration, but it was something like this, as they were doing some kind of a speed dash through the water with this thing, and or a dive, and he gave direction to his crew members there. As a captain, as the director, he's going to tell them what to do. Let's dive faster. Let's hit that second gear. Well, second gear was in his old sub, and this new sub didn't have the second gear. It didn't have the ability to do what he had just told him to do. And so this was a commanding officer giving direction here to this thing. And do what you're told. That's what the Army teaches you there, young man. Make this thing go faster somehow. Well, the young man stood there and stared at his screen and fiddled some knobs and tried to do what he was given direction to do. And then the captain said, "Well, why aren't we going faster? Why, you know, what's wrong here?" And he turned to the first mate and said, "What's wrong?" "Well, Captain, this boat don't even have that, what you told us to do." He sat there and felt so stupid. Just, here I am. Because of the force of my position, I'm going to tell this young man what to do, and it was just completely unreasonable. It wasn't here. It wasn't even part of that. The design of this boat. It's impossible what I instructed him to do, commanding officer. And through that experience, he learned something, and so he kind of changed. It's kind of a long story. He's a public speaker. Maybe some of you read some of his books, but the idea changed how they interact. It is tremendously helpful in giving direction to come from a place of learning together. We're in this together. Is this the right idea? What do you guys think? And that you know, whether you're a leader in church or a school board member, whoever you are, what to approach it together. What do you think? How can we make this work? And one of the last things here, how do you expect others to learn how to be taught if we don't model how it's done? So that goes to us as fathers, as people in authority. Are we modeling a teachable spirit? Or do we think we have to have all the answers before we have validity? Well, I was going to tell a story. I think I will, because we've run out of time. And it is on the point of humility, ego, self-confidence, how that can be so destructive. Maybe I'll save the lesson for another time, but it has to do with my wife and I driving our pickup up hunting and taking a detour that ended up in some pretty serious trouble because, you know, I thought I could do this. I thought I could get through this and just be okay. But I'll save that story for another time. But an ego, self-reliance, self-confidence, a non-teachable spirit, if you will, is tremendously destructive in life, family life, church life, relationships all over.